It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday, and we're taking a trip to our local farmers markets to talk about farm fresh summer foods. First, we're taking a look at what to expect if you're flying in the coming months. 2023 has had the highest rate of flight delays since 2014. So far, things not looking up this summer. More than one in five flights are delayed, according to the U.S. Department of Transportation. The Biden administration last month proposed rules that would force airlines to compensate passengers for expenses resulting from cancellations and significant delays. In the meantime, it's up to the airlines themselves to decide how that compensation works. We're talking about summer air travel, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been on a plane this summer so far, this year so far? Did everything go smoothly, or did you encounter a delay, a cancellation? Have you ever had a big delay? Did you get anything from the airline from it? Were you part of the big Southwest fiasco at the end of last year? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Laura Albert is a professor of industrial and systems engineering at the UW-Madison College of Engineering. Her research focuses on modeling and solving real-world problems, including things like aviation security. Laura, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First, I want to get your thoughts on these rules proposed by the Biden administration, clarifying, insisting that airlines would have to compensate us if we get canceled or bumped back too long. What are your thoughts on those?
I'm generally a fan of making travel more fun and a little less expensive. One thing to keep in mind is this comes on the tail of a lot of delayed flights. You mentioned the Southwest fiasco where there are a lot of canceled flights that honestly were preventable had Southwest taken proper steps to update their software so those delays wouldn't happen. Last year, we also saw a huge jump in airline fees, and that's due to inflation, but also all these labor shortages. The silver lining is that this year, air travel isn't necessarily supposed to be more expensive than it was last year when we had that jump up. But people are paying a lot for tickets, and then they have these delays, many of which can be prevented and aren't, and then it becomes very expensive for the consumer. And I think it's good to have some reasonable protections for consumers, and these are in line with the European Union's protection. So it's really not groundbreaking. It's really getting us probably to where we should have been.
Yeah, and it's things like not just, you know, we're going to fly you there eventually. It's also meals and accommodations and things like that, which airlines do sometimes provide, but they're not obliged to under federal law, as I understand it currently, Laura.
Exactly. And it can be very piecemeal. And, you know, I fly a lot. I've asked for some kind of reimbursement and occasionally I get a meal, which is better than nothing. But sometimes it's been on the consumer to ask and really depends on the airline and the type of delay. So this will be a stronger protections for the consumer.
And this particular guideline would be for cancellations and significant delays caused by things within the airline's control, you know, not just bad weather and things like that. Looking at the delays we see over the last year, you mentioned Southwest. A lot of that was under the airline's control. How many of the delays we see now are, you know, preventable as opposed to, you know, acts of nature that we can't do anything about?
A lot of them are preventable, and it's kind of surprising that so many are preventable because typically it seems like weather delays my flights, but some of the ways that the preventable delays occur can be flight crew, maybe somebody called in sick and they didn't have a good backup, maintenance problems, various other crew problems, crew not getting to where they need to be, airline cleaning that's slow. There could be delays due to baggage loading. And then of course, the big Southwest software delay that debacle led to a lot of cancellations actually. So some of this is due to the labor shortages and the labor issues that we've seen just across many different industries in the past few years. There's a lot of new employees in a lot of industries, and maybe they don't know all the protocols as well. There might be staffing shortages. Hopefully this will be smoothed out over time. And this new rule that's proposed provides a huge incentive for airlines to get it together and really provide a pleasant flying experience for passengers.
Talking to Laura Albert with UW-Madison College of Engineering, looking at air travel, delays, cancellations, how smoothly things go. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Love to hear your report on the state of air travel, if you've encountered it, if things went well, if things went poorly. Love to hear your story at 800-642-1234. And if you work in this industry for an airline, at an airport, in TSA, love to hear what you're seeing as well. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Laura, let's walk into that airport. And of course, we're headed over to TSA security. What kind of lines, what kind of delays are we seeing there these days?
Unfortunately, we're seeing really long lines this summer. This is because travel is at the pre-pandemic level this summer, sometimes even exceeding pre-pandemic level. And a moment ago, I pointed out there have been labor shortages, and we're still seeing that at airports. The longer lines are longer at the hub airports, and particularly at the DC and New York area airports, where they just have more labor shortages. The goal for TSA is to get everybody through security in 30 minutes and 10 minutes in a pre-check line. There is some good news for travelers that have pre-check, is that the TSA started moving children age 13 to 17 into the pre-check line if they're traveling with a parent or guardian who has pre-check. Before, it was just children ages 0 to 12. So it's a little bit easier to travel with children in pre-check and get into that faster pre-check line. Having said that, the TSA is not meeting its 30-minute goal in many airports, mostly hub airports throughout the country. So give a little extra time to fly or fly out of a smaller airport like Madison where you're less likely to wait.
As someone who studies this, Laura, and as you mentioned, somebody who flies a lot, what are your rules of thumb for how early to get to that airport before our flight?
I do have TSA pre-check, and I usually arrive about an hour ahead of time, check my bag, go through security, and I've been doing that for a long time. This year, I'm giving myself a little extra time just in case, because it's not just the congestion. The security checkpoint, there's also congestion checking a bag due to kind of these widespread labor shortages and just more travelers and therefore more queuing. So usually I'm giving myself an extra 15 to 30 minutes when I go to an airport.
When you say an hour ahead of time, is that an hour ahead of the flight's departure time or the start boarding time? They're different.
Usually the departure time. And I'm also flying out of Madison a lot, so I can, it's very reliably short TSA pre-check lines. When I'm flying back, I sometimes give myself a little extra time.
Now, how about the cost comparison? You mentioned the advantages of going into that smaller airport, but it tends to cost a little more, and you have that extra connection. How do you balance those out?
The challenge is that I live in Madison, and we're finding that Madison is actually one of the most expensive airports to fly in and out of in the country. So it's not always the case that flying out of a smaller airport is more expensive, but it is for us in Madison, which also leads to the frustration if flights are delayed for reasons that could be prevented.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Rebecca is with us in Milwaukee. Rebecca, hi.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I'm a frequent flyer and I do travel back and forth to Canada a lot, typically using Air Canada or United. And what I find with those airlines in particular, in terms of compensation for delays, they love to hide mechanical issues in weather. So what will happen is you'll get to the airport and there will be a mechanical issue that you're told about. And then weather might take over, like while you're waiting during the delay. And then they love to call it weather, so they won't compensate you. So it's happened to me multiple times. And then all they have on the record when you inquire is that it was weather related, so they don't compensate. So is there any way to deal with that? Do you have any advice?
Interesting question, Rebecca. Is this something you think happens often, Laura? There's maybe a mechanical problem somewhere there. But yeah, it was weather.
I've certainly heard of this. And you know, you are at the mercy of how they classify it, because even the proposed rules would not lead to these broad protections for weather. And so Unfortunately, all you could do is call the airline and complain. But once it gets classified in a certain way, there's not a lot you can do in real time as a flyer.
Good luck, Rebecca. Thanks for calling in. We're talking about air travel this summer, the kind of delays we might run into along the way. Laura Albert stays with us, professor of industrial and systems engineering at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have travel plans? Do they involve flying this summer? If you're looking for airfares, are you seeing higher price tags than you might have expected? Do you have advice for making flying less stressful? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about what to expect if you're flying this summer. Our guest is Laura Albert, professor of industrial and systems engineering at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a best or worst air travel experience you've had? Do you want to see the government regulate airlines more to protect consumer rights? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Tim is with us in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
Hi. I had a pretty good experience, I guess. I fly over to Europe a lot, and I usually fly Aer Lingus to Ireland. And they overbooked last Christmas, and we called them up and said I was bumped from the flight, they immediately compensated me €600. They gave me business class on the next flight the next day and comped my hotel and would have comped any food if I had I ate any between now then and when they picked me up. The worst flights I have is actually coming into Madison. And going out of Madison, it's always delayed. It's always a hassle, and it's very expensive. So I'll have to contradict your guest there on that one.
Tim, thanks for the call. So first of all, that overbooking issue, Laura, as I understand, there is federal law requiring more compensation when the airline is overbooked versus that mechanical delay or things like that. But Tim also saying, I think the European system did well by him. Your thoughts on overbooking in the system?
Overbooking is a great strategy for the airlines. It actually helps them keep fares low. And in the U.S., there is some protection, and you know the airlines cannot force a passenger to take a different flight. But the guest points out how well it can be with protections to be bumped from a flight, and then that follow-up flight, when it's rebooked, can actually be quite pleasant. It doesn't lead to any out-of-pocket expenses for the traveler. So seeing those types of widespread protections is doable and could be make flying a lot more pleasant.
Thanks for that call and sharing that. Heather joins us now in Waukesha. Heather, hi.
Hi. I'm actually part of a group of 10. We're flying out of Chicago tomorrow to go to Italy as a culinary student. So we're just trying to prepare ourselves as far as what we should expect going through TSA and making sure that we're all prepared for what we need to know ahead of time.
Okay, Heather, I got to ask, what are you studying in culinary in Italy? And can we have you on Food Friday when you get back?
So we are actually doing a lot of hands-on cooking over there. So everything will be hands-on. The chefs over in Italy will come to us. We're staying in a villa between Rome and Florence. So it's a small little town. Everybody will come to us. We'll go to local market. I would love to go ahead and come back for Food Friday after I go over there and get to do a lot more hands-on.
Heather, thanks a lot. Or maybe there's room in Heather's luggage and I can stow away in that. Thanks a lot for the call. Heather, advice on a big international trip for a group like that, Laura, flying out of O'Hare. When to get there, what to expect on the way in.
I always leave a lot more time at airports for international flights. One thing that I'll do recently that I'd recommend is downloading the MyTSA app. This is maybe a reflection that lines have gotten a little bit longer, but the TSA has an app where you can monitor those security lines. So if you tend to be anxious about that, and many travelers are, that really helps monitor the lines. I also use other apps. My favorite is FlightAware to just check the status of my flights ahead of time. And I can see where the plane is coming from and get a little automated alerts on my phone. Some of that helps manage some of the uncertainty with flying. The other thing that many travelers aren't aware of is it's possible to make an appointment at airport security. And actually, Rome is one of the places where you can make an appointment to go through security. Most of the time, you have to be a member of CLEAR, which has a membership cost per year, but it really can make traveling easier and getting through the airport a lot easier if you can reduce a lot of the uncertainty ahead of time.
Heather, thanks a lot for that call. Watch out. I think there was an airline strike or something in Italy. A friend of mine's kid had some trouble getting there not too long ago. So maybe check the papers on that, Heather. And thanks for the call. We're talking about air travel with Laura Albert, professor of industrial and systems engineering at UW-Madison. Laura, I wanted to talk some about, systems to prevent big problems. Let's start with Southwest at the end of last year. As I understand it, they do their routing a little differently than other airlines, what people call a point-to-point system. How are they different? What went wrong? Was it preventable?
Yeah, so the what went wrong was with their software system that just couldn't handle the loads of people calling in sick with the Omicron variant. I believe it was just had a lot of manual processes that eventually just were too difficult to manage. And it sounds like it was more of a pain for the employees there than actual passengers until it became a really big problem. You're right in that Southwest has a point-to-point style where they don't have hubs and spokes like all of the other major airlines in the United States. It gives them a competitive advantage because they have a different structure and that they can fly direct flights to places that other airlines don't offer those direct flights. So that's a big part of their business model. And other airlines all use the hub and spoke system where everybody typically flies to a big hub, switches flights, and then takes a second flight to their destination. Both are challenging to manage disruptions. So disruptions do occur, especially large weather disruptions. What a lot of people don't know is regardless of the airline, that airlines are actually pretty good at recovering from weather disasters. And they use a lot of mathematical optimization and industrial engineering to get the passengers on the right flights to get to their destination, which is kind of remarkable given that flights do fill up when you have to cancel a lot of flights or many people miss a connection. You can't just put them all on the next flight. There's a limited number of seats. And it's really amazing how just using math and managing all these different flight travel plans are able to manage some of those disruptions after the fact. And that's something that they do proactively that, can make things a little bit better when there is a disruption, could be worse. And that's one thing that they're doing well, but we'd like them to see fewer of these disruptions occur that can be avoided upfront. And hopefully we see them make progress in that area in this next year.
Right. We've still seen some trouble. This isn't just a story about Southwest. Are there changes that airlines are making, could make to bring these high recent numbers of delays down? Is it just a matter of letting the labor pool catch up or are there other things they could be doing?
Yeah, some of it is that. And I'd like to see them, as well as the TSA, be more aggressive in being able to hire employees, offer more generous benefit packages, offer startup or signing bonuses. I believe the TSA is starting to do that. That would really help. And then it's going to take some time to ensure that those employees are trained so that things like baggage handling is very smooth and doesn't lead to flight delays. So it's going to take a little while, but the more aggressive they can be in terms of compensating employees and encouraging more to apply, the better shape we'll be in.
And in terms of demand side, we hear about all these problems with airlines and, sounds like nightmare stories, especially with the Southwest thing. People are still flying, though, right? There's a lot of demand, a lot of people very happy to pay to go on a plane now.
Exactly. Here we are about three years after the pandemic, and travel reduced by 95% during the pandemic. So 3 years ago, travel decreased 95%. So it's actually quite remarkable that the system is working as well as it has because there's, their labor pool went way down and then came back up. I'm not surprised that travel is bouncing back. People like to travel. And we saw it take a couple years after September 11th to fully bounce back. And there seems to be human memory. And in this case, we had an ongoing pandemic. But it is nice to see that people are able to fly around the world, travel, take vacations.
All right, we got a minute left. I'm going to ask maybe the nerdiest possible question. You talked about the math that airlines use to keep things flowing. What kinds of math are they plugging in here to make this work?
Yeah, can I say integer programming?
Because that's
really exciting.
Like we could, I don't think we have to bleep that.
Okay. Yeah, so it's a large-scale optimization, and it's basically a lot of discrete math problems and discrete optimization problems. It's a lot of different decisions, figuring out which aircraft should be assigned to which flight, figuring how frequently they should fly between different pairs of city, and then also optimizing the crews. And so sometimes the flight's not delayed or the airplane isn't delayed, but the crew coming from another flight is. And all of those are a lot of decisions. And if there's one disruption, there's a lot of ripple effects, which is why it's so hard and why you need to use large-scale mathematical optimization, which essentially optimizes millions of decision variables at a time. And we have the algorithms and computer power to do that. And it's kind of beautiful.
Laura, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Laura Albert, professor of industrial and systems engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison College of Engineering. Her research focuses on modeling and solving real-world problems, including things like aviation security. She joined us for a look at summer air travel. Still time for you to share your story, for better or worse, of air travel in the recent years. Let us know. Tell us about it over on our email, ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Coming up after the news, this week's edition of Food Friday is all about local farm fresh foods. Chef Elena Terry joins us to talk about the best ways to take advantage of our local farmers markets, the local produce we might find at the grocery store, and the ways that local foods can benefit our communities. Hope you'll join that conversation as well. Get a garden report, a farmers market report from your neck of the woods. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, UW-Madison law professor reviews a state Supreme Court ruling that police have probable cause to arrest someone and search them and their car if they say they smell marijuana. Now it's Food Friday. We're in the peak of the summer farmers market season. Local food producers are selling their fresh produce, meats, and dairy on stands across Wisconsin. Sometimes it can be a little intimidating, overwhelming to pick through what to buy, when to buy it, where it came from, who to get it from. Our next guest says getting fresh foods from our small businesses is important for supporting local economies and communities and our health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How much of your food, your produce, comes from local farms maybe in your area? Where do you get it? Do you go to farmers markets, that farm stand? Do you have a helpful neighbor who grows lots? Or maybe you've got a great garden in your own backyard? Join in at 800-642-1234. Or if you sell at a local farmer's market, love to hear from you. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Elena Terry is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, an executive chef and founder of Wild Berries, a Wisconsin nonprofit working to strengthen tribal communities through food and education. Elena, welcome back to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, a big part of the story here, Elena, isn't just the food itself. You're really interested in how local consumers can connect with their local food producers. Can you talk about that a little?
Absolutely. I feel as a chef and also as a mother having a household that I run, it's important for us to support local economies and also to support those who are doing responsible agricultural practices. Say, going against this large corporation, large agriculture, and showing up at the farmers markets locally with some of the best produce that you can find anywhere. I mean, we're in a really beautiful space in Wisconsin, and that almost every town on the square has a farmer's market during the summer. And being able to know when those markets are, you can have the freshest, most delicious produce almost all season long.
Just sometimes at a farmer's market, like I love that I'm supporting local farmers, but I'm like, okay, I gave them $5 for these radishes or whatever. It doesn't feel like I'm doing a lot to support the local economy, just buying a little bit of produce here and there. Does it really add up to enough to really support that thriving local economy?
It really does. And you have to think about the quality of the products that you're buying for that $5 and know that like that $5 times 20 people that come through in a day for a bunch of radishes does have an impact on what that farmer is able to receive economically for income, because there's a lot of farmers in our area that don't have the capacity to be able to sell massive amounts of food, but love being a part of this small town beauty that we have in our state and being able to show up and be proud of what they've grown or how they've grown it. And I really see that there's a shift in the way we look at our food when we invest in local economies and we know the people who are growing our food. You value the ingredients a little bit more. And I've noticed in my household, it really reduces the amount of food waste that we have.
Now, as a chef you and an educator, you might encounter people who, you know, may know how to cook with this and that, but, you know, don't know what to do with this piece of produce. I mean, I'm still there sometimes with when I encounter some new produce. How do you encourage people to, you know, try something new, add something into their repertoire that they find, say, at the farmer's market or the local stand at their grocery store?
I mean, nowadays you can find a recipe in an instant on your phone. And I think that when you open your mind to different flavors and possibilities. I mean, you're not going to like everything, but I found that you like most things, you know, unless it's an incredibly exotic flavor or texture that might be incredibly unfamiliar or unpleasant, which not a lot of people would be selling at the farmer's market. You're able to find some really neat alternatives or supplements to what your normal menu might be when you're making dinner at home or if you're bringing something to a potluck. I think it's really incredible when you get to think outside of the box when it comes to ingredients and how you treat them also, because there's a lot of different ways other than what you might contemporarily think of how to make, say, a summer squash or zucchini. And I think once you start exploring, you just naturally want to explore more and you want to try more and find more. And I think when you give yourself the grace to say, I'm not going to like everything that I try, it gives you a little bit more flexibility and it makes it a lot more fun.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Elena Terry, executive chef and founder of Wild Berries. We are taking advantage of Wisconsin's summer produce, headed to the farmer's market, the farm stand, the local section at your local grocery store, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of farmer's markets or your particular local farmer's market? What are you seeing there or in your garden or in your local grocery store that has you excited this time of year? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Vivian is with us in Green Bay. Vivian, hi.
Hello. I love farmer's markets. Shop them all summer long and even into the winter sometimes. But I get a second food source when I go to the farmer's market and buy a bunch of beets or a bunch of radishes. The greens are so tender and delicious and fresh, they're not wasted. They're in my salads. They're sautéed. Typically, when I buy them at the grocery store, those greens go to waste because they're not very good.
Vivian, thanks a lot for the call. Or often they're not on the product anymore in the first place at the grocery store. Elena, being able to use more of the produce in the first place when we get them fresh at the farmer's market.
Yes, absolutely. And I was hoping that somebody would say that, because those greens on the top of even like the carrots, the beets, there's chard, there's so many different greens that are just jam-packed with nutrients and vitamins that a lot of people do discard, and they are delicious. Some of them have a little bit of spice. Some have a little bit more of the green chlorophyll-y taste, but they're also distinctly different that you can definitely use those and make them into, say, a salad. Or I really enjoy grilling my greens because it gives it a little bit more of a smokier flavor. And I like the bitter to contrast whatever dressing I'm putting on it. But it really does allow you to think outside the box in what you're using or what you're purchasing and how you will use that produce from the market. Great suggestion.
Vivian, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. I want to talk about a couple other possible sources of that local produce, Elena. A lot of people in some parts of the states are part of these CSAs, community-supported agriculture farms. Are those an important part of that local farm economy scene?
Absolutely, they are. And the best part of CSAs is because everybody gets kind of the same base boxes. So it's a great way to share recipes, to spark conversation with others, and also with your growers. If there is something that you're unfamiliar with or intimidated by, it's a wonderful place to get it in a CSA, because a lot of times they will include supplemental recipes or suggested uses of those maybe unfamiliar pieces of produce. And so, like, great way to explore when it's included in a package that you get of fresh produce. And I can't say enough about CSAs. I love that there are farms that are putting these together and distributing throughout, you know, the communities and making that fresh produce accessible.
How about restaurants turning to local produce? We see a lot more farm-to-table types of things, or even some restaurants just, you know, when they can get some ingredients, even if they're not going full-on farm-to-table. Are you seeing that grow over the years?
Yes, especially coming out of COVID and really being able to take a hard look at what our food system is and how we're sourcing food and where the bottom line of that economic, you know, the equation of how the economy works and the way we are able to help support that locally. I mean, it's a win-win relationship when restaurants are willing to do that and when the farmer is willing to go through all of the things that they need to do to be able to pass with food code. And there's a lot of like certifications that need to happen. But once that's done, I mean, it is an incredible way to source locally. And I have worked in restaurants and have been part of menu development in those spaces where we are able to source locally. And like, what an incredible position to be in, to be able to say like, oh, this is the freshest and it's the most delicious right now. How can I put something together that will honor not only this ingredient and what it's bringing to the table, but also how can we bring awareness and honor those who are growing such incredible produce for us? And so it really is a great way to highlight that work that doesn't really get recognized as much as I think it should.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Wildberries founder and executive chef Elena Terry about local farm fresh foods this summer. Coming up, we're going to start naming some more names. Things we're excited to see at the farmer's market right now. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a piece of seasonal produce that you are excited to see out there right now or that you're looking forward to over the next few weeks? Do you have a favorite farmer's market you want to put in a plug for? Do you sell at a farmer's market? Love to hear from you as well. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with Elena Terry, executive chef and founder of the tribal community outreach group Wild Berries. And she's with us today for a look at local produce at our local small businesses, our summertime farmers markets. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. What kind of foods do you like to buy from local farmers? Where do you get them? At farmers markets, a CSA, your local store, that farm stand. Put in a plug for your source of local Wisconsin produce at 800-642-1234. 1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Elena was talking to one of our colleagues here at WPR earlier, told her about our Food Friday. She mentioned being excited about strawberries this time of year. Now, you and I have had a whole conversation about berries in the summer. What are you watching for right now?
Oh, right now. Definitely the berries are. I've been getting a lot of rhubarb also, which of course is a perfect match for strawberries. Mm. So seeing some of those come out is incredible. I was really excited when I saw one of my growers had posted her first harvest of rainbow carrots. So I know that we're kind of transitioning as, you know, the summer gets a little warmer and the days are a little longer on what we're able to get. But I really do like the leafy greens that come. And I got a bag of spinach 2 weeks ago that was incredible. It was so delicious. We used all of it. We were like the fettuccine Alfredo with spinach or lasagna with spinach. And we had spinach salad. It was just so good. Absolutely delicious things at the market. And I don't want to forget saying that, you know, there's so many local artisans that also sell at the local farmers markets, like specialty breads, or I know at one of my local markets, we have somebody who does honey and maple syrup also, and they're there in the summertime as well. So there's a lot of other things that you are also able to get and support with that local artistry at the farmer's market.
I want to talk about your strategy at farmer's markets, Elena. Do you come with a shopping list? I need blank, blank, and blank. Or do you go with the attitude like, I'm going to see what's there and I'll build some meals around whatever's looking good?
I absolutely go with just a big bag and an open mind. And I love having conversations with the people who sell their goods because they're the ones who know what is the ripest, what is its peak flavor. And if it's something that I'm unfamiliar with, they're the experts on letting me know what characteristics it has or what it might be paired well with. And that's my starting point. So then I can kind of taste it in different ways and grow with it and develop it. So I'm always open to whatever's the freshest and most readily available to cook that evening at the farmer's market.
Now that conversation with the farmer, I can get a bit Midwestern and be like, oh, I don't want to be a bother. I'll just buy what I want and move on. Do you find that though, that farmers and other vendors love to talk about their products to their customers?
Absolutely. Who wouldn't be proud of what they've put a lot of hard work and energy into bringing to the consumer? So I always enjoy, if it's not too busy, sparking up a conversation with those growers. And it does build a relationship. Like there are certain growers that I started conversations with that are growing specific things now because I was like, you know what I would love to see? And then you have to wait almost an entire, well, you do a whole year to be able to get those onto the table. But when they show up and that person is willing to do the work for you, like those are the relationships that we really need to continue building in community and saying like, I see you for the work you're doing and I am a fan. How can I continue supporting or would you be willing to do this? You know, those are the conversations that really can continue on for years after.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Nick is with us in Green Bay. Nick, hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I just wanted to put in a plug for Farm Fresh Express, which is it's an online local delivery service. So we've got organic, there's organic foods from all local vendors that are delivered from roughly Green Bay down to Milwaukee every week.
And now are you getting, is it just like you get pieces of produce or is it, you know, a meal kit sort of thing where you get locally made stuff and a recipe with it? How does it work?
Well, if you just go onto the website and you can pick and choose. So it's whatever you want that week. You know, there's no recipes or boxes. It's just if you want lettuce, if you want spinach, if you want squash, organic potatoes, whatever you like. We've got organic meats, fishes, all kinds of good stuff.
Nick, thanks for telling us about that. Elena, people getting creative, I think, especially post-COVID with finding other ways to connect that local farm with local consumers.
Yeah, and I think as long as, you know, one of the biggest things is, especially coming from the dairy land that is, has faced some incredible changes in the past 10 years when it comes to agriculture, it's important to support that local growing aspect. So if it's a delivery system that supplies themselves from local organic growers and delivers it, like, wow, I'm going to look it up too.
Nick, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. It's Food Friday. We're talking to Elena Terry, executive chef and founder of Wild Berries, looking at why we might want to connect with farmers markets and other sources of local produce, and then what to do with some of that local produce once we get our hands on it. All right, Elena, I want to look into the future now, and I see the future holds tomatoes and zucchini and then some corn. What kind of recipes are you looking forward to making with that produce that's going to be emerging over the next few weeks to a month?
I think when we say the word salad, we have this image in our mind of iceberg lettuce with a tomato wedge and maybe a slice of cucumber. But really, you can make so many incredible things into a salad. And in the summertime, it's very refreshing to have cold, crisp produce with a delicious dressing that I always try to make sure includes a hearty amount of vinegar, because that helps our body as well. And when you really think about something like a beet salad or watermelon, I really like fresh herbs and cheese because I'm from Wisconsin, right? Like, there's so many things that you can do to make it pop or go, wow. You could even add canned beans or dried beans that you've cooked to add additional protein to something like a salad. So I always get excited about that possibility and what I can put together that is not only filling, but incredibly nutritious for you.
Now, with watermelon salad, I'm happy just to cube up some watermelon and put it in a bowl and eat it. What kind of things can we do to add some flavor to jazz it up as a salad?
My kids love watermelon salad with feta or goat cheese sprinkled on it, fresh basil, and a balsamic vinegar. And it is almost everything that your palate would need. You know, there's the sweet, the refreshing, a little bit of that tang. You could, if you like, add some spice like chili powder, or there's some other like tahine or something that you might want to put on the refreshing watermelon. But there's so many different combinations that I think I'm going to have to go and get one now, because we've been talking about that salad.
And then for beets, now, I'm the only one in my household who likes beets, but that's fine. What do you like to mix with beets for a beet salad?
Oh, I personally like very thinly sliced red onions, some cucumbers, because I like my beets to be roasted and then sliced. So I like having a little bit of crunch, maybe some pepitas on top of there. And I like the goat cheese is a really good, mild, smooth cheese that goes with it. What we like to do is I get the baby romaine heads and cut them in half and grill that, and then kind of make it, it's a boat when you take it off the grill, and load it up with all of that fresh vegetables.
That sounds fantastic. And Elena, corn season is coming. We've had a whole conversation about corn. I don't know. When are you looking to hit the corn this year?
Oh, my gosh. As soon as it's ready. I absolutely love corn. And yes, we had a whole conversation about it. I'm growing two different varieties right now, and I have other people growing a couple other varieties. But you can't forget the honey dipped or the sweet candy corn that you can get at the farmer's market as well.
Elena, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's always a wonderful conversation with you.
That's Elena Terry, member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, executive chef and founder of Wild Berries. That's B-E-A-R-I-E-S. It's a Wisconsin nonprofit working to strengthen tribal communities through food and education. She joined us today to help us pick some farm fresh food this summer at our local farmers markets, small businesses, and beyond. You can keep sharing your summertime favorites, your favorite farmer's market, your favorite produce to buy locally, let us know. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show, it's been 1 year since the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the Roe v. Wade decision, putting Wisconsin's abortion ban back into effect. Look at the impacts of the Roe reversal here in the state and beyond. That's coming up Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. If you go into an Irish town this weekend dressed up as Dolly Parton, no one will ask you, why'd you come in here looking like that? Because you won't be alone. There'll be hundreds, maybe thousands of Dolly impersonators. As reported in the Washington Post, the town of Listowel in Ireland, population under 5,000, looking to set a Guinness record for the most Dolly Partons in one place. They need at least 250. They've sold tickets to over 1,200. The rules to meet the Guinness standard, you have to be dressed head to toe as Dolly Parton, not just a wig, people. And you have to be instantly recognizable as the music legend. Parton herself won't be there, but a representative from Dollywood will be on hand to support the event and the charity fundraiser. Why is Dolly Parton big in Ireland? She's big everywhere, but one song may give her a special boost.
We Irish love to sing. We Irish love to dance. We Irish love to party whenever we get the chance.
Good luck, Listowel. This is Central Time.
But we have a lot of soul. We'll drink a pint of Guinness and forget about